You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello, and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am your co-host, the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me, as always, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what a weekend in wrestling we just had. What's up, bro?
Dude, we had a lot. I mean, it was a good weekend. You know, they built up a lot of storylines last week, and you're like, hey, man, they're going to play out this weekend at Survivor Series.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about how I feel about that, but overall, enjoyable week of wrestling. You know, it's kind of cool because, you know, it's in LA this week, and a lot of stuff's going around in the California area about wildfires and stuff, and for the people, you know, definitely prayers for all those people, but for the people that do get a chance, it'd be a great way to escape for a couple days.
Absolutely, absolutely. No better way to try to escape, you know, than to have some sports entertainment, you know. Obviously, like you said, prayers going out to all the people affected by the crazy wildfires that are going out there. The campfire is what they're referring it to. But I got my coffee. It's now 7:46, 7:56 a.m. Monday morning. So now we have the ability to look back over the whole weekend. So what would you grade the whole weekend as a whole of wrestling?
That's C.
A C.
I'm gonna saying C as an S-E in this case.
Oh, okay.
TakeOver A+, Survivor Series a C. So I have to say it was a B overall. But it's like, as long as I get to watch TakeOver, my weekend's an A. Because it's like my favorite thing.
Okay,
it's kind of crazy. I love New Japan Wrestling. It's like one of my favorite wrestlings, but I enjoy TakeOvers more than I enjoy any event in wrestling.
Okay, I dig it. Well, let's start off with TakeOver, shall we?
Yes, definitely.
So we started off with a surprise match that when I seen it happen, I actually thought that people were gonna shit all over this, basically, just to be honest with you. And that's the Matt Riddle beating Cassius Ohno in 5 seconds. But people actually, like, really dug it. What did you think about that?
Riddle is beloved.
Right, right.
Riddle is like Becky Lynch. Like, you know, when Sami Zayn first came to WWE, people just love Matt Riddle because he's just so himself all the time. And his character is a reflection of himself. The only person that could probably get away with beating Cassius Ohno as quick on their roster and not get booed is Matt Riddle.
Okay, I see it. I got my coffee here, dude, so I'm just, break it down any way you want to, man.
And you know, he definitely gets love because you know what he's known for. He's known for being super pothead.
The weed connoisseur.
And, you know, he has that, you know, the California vibe. He's not California born, but he very much has a California vibe, the dude vibe, bro, you know, that kind of thing.
I'm glad you mentioned that because this was actually the first time I've heard his intro music, and it just starts off with, bro.
Yeah, it was like, he used Dr. Dre's music. You know, like most of his time in the indies, and you know, and they did their, you know, the WWE staff tried to do their own version of that, and of course you got to start with the bro because that's what he does.
it's so original to him, and yet it's so WWE at the same time in such a weird way, don't you think?
Yes.
Starting definitely. Off with, bro.
You got to know he's coming, man. That's why I said about Keith Lee when he got to NXT and they changed his music. And my big thing was, it's like, the thing about his music, it was, it announces his presence with authority. It was very much, to me, his indie music was very much a WWE thing. Because it's like, he comes in, Keith Lee, the man, he announces who he is immediately. And that's a very WWE thing. You know, whether it's the Big Show with, it's the Big Show. And then you got, you know, John Cena, you start with his voice, Shawn Michaels, you know. That's how they like to announce. They want to, from that first sound, first note, they want you to know who's coming so you can get that reaction.
Right, right. Obviously, probably the most famous one, the glass breaking when Stone Cold comes out. Yeah,
definitely. So iconic, you know. Glass breaking and here comes Stone Cold. And, you know, when you hear the glass hit your ass, you know, that, the whole thing. And it was just, it's what it is. And it's like, they hooked up his music. You know the bro is coming, and he has this very, he's like the anti-Lesnar. He's like, he's such a badass and everything, but he just carries it with confidence, you know? And I'm like, he doesn't have to say it. He doesn't have to be pissed off all the time. He's chill.
Yeah. But
then he'll knee you in the face.
Right, like, right. Yeah, I love him. I'm not going to lie. Like I said, when I was first talking about the match, I thought that people were going to kind of poo-poo on this a little bit, but I was pleasantly surprised that everybody was like, you know. I guess Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane were next, right? So
Shayna Baszler, Kairi Sane, 2 out of 3 falls match. I thought this was unique.
Okay.
For a 2000, because it was very short and fast-paced. Did you notice that?
The first fall came like 2 or 3 minutes in, didn't it?
Yeah, and it was just like, that was weird to me. I mean, I guess not every 2 out of 3 falls match needed to be 30 minutes long. Because I feel like it told the story, but I felt like it rushed it.
Yeah, that's what I kind of felt like that, to be honest, a little bit as well. Like 2 minutes in and getting the first pin, I was like, what?
Yeah, my whole thing is they set aside, you know, 3 hours, and they only had 4 matches, so why not let them tell their story long?
Right, right. The entire match with all 3 falls went less than 11 minutes. It went 10 minutes and 51 seconds.
Yeah, so you got a 2 out of 3 falls match, women's match. You only got 4 matches. You got 3 hours. Why is the match only 11 minutes?
Yeah, good point, man.
It's like, I mean, I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying it wasn't bad. It felt rushed. It felt like most of the show had went over, and they only had 15 minutes to tell the story.
Right.
But in reality, it was the first match.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I thought there were some good spots, and the whole Kairi Sane struggling out of the Kira Feuder clutch or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was really good. That first fall, the attack by Jessamyn Duke and Rhea Shafir was really bad on the outside.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
They just missed. I think they threw like 11 strikes and they hit like 3. Like, that's even bad for the UFC, dude. Come on. They were just missing. And she was selling, of course, because she's really good. But
right,
come
right.
on. It was like, yeah. You can tell they're green. They're green. Jessamyn Duke has a look. Sharina Shafir looks like she... I mean, she looks like she's not all the way in shape yet. Let me say that, and that's probably the nicest way I can say it.
I got you.
So that first fall was good. I love on the second fall that Kairi Sane did it by herself. I mean, yeah, she did it by herself. But I will always say, and I will make this point later, I will always prefer bad guys to good guys because bad guys actually have their friends back.
Right. They'll actually help. They'll get their hands dirty.
So they're interfering all that time, and it takes to the third fall before her two friends come out and help.
Right.
Why don't they just come out with you?
That moonsault was incredible.
And they caught her.
Yes.
They actually caught her.
Yes.
I was listening to Voices of Wrestling, Flagship this week, and I don't regurgitate things, but they made the point that most wrestling fans know that the WWE women's wrestlers are horrible at catching each other. They just don't. And you're surprised there's not more injuries from those because no one ever catches anyone. And it was like when they caught her, I was like, there you go. I was like, it was like maybe they're turning around, and then you know. I was proud. It was a proud moment that they actually caught her, and you know, she didn't look like she was gonna break her ankle or something like that when people land from that height. But that was really good. That was really good. I hated this, and I don't know if you noticed this. All Shayna Baszler did was go for the sleeper.
Yeah, the whole time.
She didn't really do any wrestling moves.
Yeah. Yeah, I did notice that she went for it quite a few times, and a lot of her offense predicated off of that, right? Or I guess a lot of Kairi Sane's offense predicated off of Shayna Baszler going for the sleeper, because she would do a reverse, a back roll into a pin and getting out of it and stuff like that. So yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah,
it was a little bit different. Yeah,
Sane actually had an offense.
Yeah,
it was like Baszler, you're not going to try to wear her down before going for the sleeper.
What did you rate the match overall?
I gave it I gave it a 3.
Okay.
I mean, it was like, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it told the story it was supposed to tell. I didn't find it wholly entertaining, though.
Okay. Do you think if they would have had more time, do you think it could have been a little bit better in your eyes?
Yes,
Or do
definitely.
You think how the match was laid out just wasn't to your liking?
Like I say, if they would have wrestled,
I got
it just
you.
Didn't feel like it was wrestling. It felt like it was Shayna going for the Carafita clutch and Kairi reversing it. And she did a few moves. Like, even when she won in the second round, it was like she only hit like 3 moves, you know? And it was like, okay, that knocks out your, I don't know. It just didn't, like I said, I might have overthought it, but it just didn't make a lot of sense to me.
Gotcha. Next, we had Aleister Black beating Johnny Gargano in 18 minutes and 10 seconds. What did you think?
Match of the night. Match of the night. I kind of, in my first thought was 5 stars, but I went 4.75. Because you really do got to have, to me, you got to have a line. And I didn't think it was quite 5 stars, but I thought it was right there. And if someone says they thought it was 5 stars, I wouldn't argue.
Okay.
Yeah, so I thought it was a really good match. Oh, man, the DDT spot to the outside. There was the, when he was coming for the the Tope DDT. And then he did the tope and caught the knee in the head. That was pretty cool. He did the springboard. Aleister Black did the springboard Meteora.
Oh, was that not so cool, man?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the spots that I noticed, but I thought that was really cool. And Aleister Black did what I love with people. You take a long time off, you come back with energy, and he added about 3 or 4 more moves to his repertoire.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I want. I mean, to me as wrestlers, you should always be growing. I know you got to hit your favorites, you got to hit the things that people want to see, but, you know, add a little bit. You know, Jericho's always, you know, he's always evolving, and I feel like that's how wrestlers should be. I did think it was really cool when he did the springboard into the I don't even know what to call it, where you cross your legs. I mean, when I was growing up, it was called Indian style, but I don't know if that's racist or not.
Crisscross applesauce.
See, people call it that, but that seems really long to say crisscross applesauce. But yeah. Well, he sat down, and then Johnny Gargano just kicked him in the head, and then I thought it would have been cool. Like, I thought that was a really good spot. But when he sat down and said, "Give me your best shot," now if Johnny would have actually kicked him, and then he would have kicked out, I thought that would have been much more of an impactful moment than what they did with Johnny Gargano going for the knee and Aleister Black ducking. I mean, that was good, but I thought more impactful would have been like, I'm sitting down, kick me in your face.
I'm going to prove that you
your
can't
best
hurt
isn't
me.
Good enough. Yeah. Gotcha. So I thought that would have added more to it, but I really did enjoy that moment. And at the end, when he was literally holding him up with his body and holding him up with his feet, and he hit him with the black mask, and then he said that last thing, "I will absolve you of your sins," I just thought that was perfect.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talking in this match.
There was. They were talking back and forth quite a bit. Man, this match was... We could spend 45 minutes breaking down this 18-minute match. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was just, these two guys are, I mean, they're geniuses inside the ring. They're absolute geniuses.
18 minutes, zero rest holds. Someone pointed that out to me. I was like, what? They said, yeah, no rest holds.
Wow.
And it was actual psychology. He's just like, yeah, it was like basically doing an 18-minute sprint. And I was like, damn.
Dude, I forgot what it's called, and I should have texted my buddy to ask him what it was called. I think it might be just the Gargano warm-up or something. But, you know, Johnny Gargano, before he signed with NXT, and he might still do it, but he trained wrestlers because, you know, he's known the world around for being one of the best wrestlers in the world. And before he will take on anyone and train them one-on-one, he says that your cardio has to be up to par, and he makes his trainees prove that they can do like this, this like drill that he's come up with, and it's you got to run the ropes 10 times, and that means hitting one side and hitting the other side is one. So you actually you hit each side 20 times, right?
Uh-huh.
And then so you run the ropes 20 times. And then you do 10 front rolls, 10 back rolls. You hit the ropes 10 times. Then you do 10 quarter rolls to the left, 10 quarter rolls to the right. Hit the ropes 10 times, 10 burpees, and then hit the ropes 10 times again. And you can't stop. You can slow down a little bit, but you cannot stop. And he makes people have to be able to do that before he starts training them one-on-one. That is insane. I don't even know if I could hit the ropes 20 times right now, bro. It's just I don't know. Sorry, I didn't mean to break up the flow of everything. But when I wrestled with a guy on Monday, and that's what he was telling me. I don't remember. I think he went to one of his seminars or something like that when he was on the indie scene. Anyway, it was just incredible the way when he was explaining it to me. I'm thinking, geez, God, I don't know if I could ever do that.
You wouldn't be able to do it before he trained you.
Right, yeah. I guess if I had the opportunity, if I had the chance to train with Johnny Gargano, I would work my ass off to get there, huh?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's more like, you know, it's like, of course he wants you to be in a great condition, but it's also a test to see how bad you want to train.
Right. Yep. Sorry, I was grabbing my coffee. Getting a little bit more coffee in my system, bro. You know how I love that morning coffee. Yeah, but it like you just said, it is a test. Like it's kind of like to prove to him that you really want it. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
and I totally get that.
Like before I waste my time training you.
Right, right.
Show me that you want this.
Right, right. Next, we had the NXT title match, which was Tommaso Ciampa defeating Velveteen Dream in 22 minutes and 35 seconds. What did you think about this bad boy?
All right, so first, Velveteen Dream's outfit was five stars.
Five star. Five star.
He come out with the Hollywood Dream, and it sounds like you would think he was Hollywood Hogan with a Velveteen Dream thing. So there's two things to this. There's two big things, two big shout outs. When Patrick Clark, aka Velveteen Dream, was on Tough Enough, the person that made the decision to cut him that week was Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
So the second thing is Hulk Hogan gave him a shout out and said, if you ever need a manager, hit me up. And actually, you can go for another third thing, is that, you know, the whole Hogan being a racist and using the N-word. So to have a black wrestler that he cut come out with a Hulk Hogan themed gear, that was pretty epic. That was bold. That was, he gets it, you know. And of course, there's the other part of it. He was in LA, which is Hollywood.
Right, right, right.
There was just so many levels to this gear. I'm like, I haven't even got to the match yet.
Yeah, like, it pretty much could have meant whatever you want it to mean, basically.
Yes. He comes out in this gear, and it's just like, there's so many levels to the gear. So your first, you like, he won the entrance, you know?
He won the entrance war.
Yeah, he won the entrance war, which he does every time, because it's great, because his matches have even more of a big match feel, because he has a unique gear for each of the match.
Right.
Tommaso Ciampa, when he comes out to a match, he's Tommaso Ciampa. You know what I mean?
Right.
And certain people, when they come out to the match, they're the same person. But when you have gear that really speaks to your match and to the event that you're having to have, it just adds a different level to it.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to point out, because I forgot, I loved Matt Riddle's tights, because across his tights, in the NXT lettering style, it said bro.
I forgot to mention that.
I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, Velveteen Dream, of course, and Tommaso Ciampa, who has more heat. I thought more heat than anybody in wrestling, but I found out Survivor Series, there's a person with more heat than him. So they come out and they put on a masterpiece. As far as this was, I know the moves and stuff were more current, but this was a homage to 80s wrestling in every way. Velveteen's the up-and-comer against the crafty veteran Tommaso Ciampa. You don't know if it's Velvet. You think it's Velveteen's time, but you don't quite know. And then they go out and put on this amazing match. And Velveteen Dream did so many shout-outs to so many wrestlers. He gave you the Hogan boot and leg drop. He gave you the turnbuckle figure four for Bret Hart. He gave you the regular figure four for Ric Flair.
Woo!
He gave you the ass out for Ric Flair. I don't know if you even know this, but in the 80s, Ric Flair's ass in his biggest matches, his ass would almost always be out. His pale white ass would almost always be out.
Was it Tony Schiavone that said that was Ric Flair's favorite spot? It was someone said that. It was like, it is not a Ric Flair match unless his ass is hanging out.
Yes. So Velveteen Dream's ass is hanging out for a good minute or two in this match. And I was like, how long is they going to let his ass hang out? But no, there were so many spots. He did the outside, the rope, elbow. I mean, they all hit their finishers. It was just a really good match.
These two guys are awesome. I got to ask a question. So I was listening to, I think it was Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervive. How do you say his name? Sempervive?
Simper, I don't know.
But you know what I'm talking about. The Wrestling Observer Live or Wrestling Observer Radio co-host, whenever Meltzer's not there, it's Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervive, whatever. He said that he believes Velveteen Dream is a good wrestler, but he most of the time is carried to the really good matches. That if it was two people that were if he was wrestling someone that was only as good as him, he wouldn't be able to put on a five-star match. Do you believe that, or?
I completely disagree.
Okay.
Because EC3 is not considered a great wrestler. He's actually considered an average to below average performer, and Velveteen Dream pulled him up to his level in that match.
Gotcha.
So I've seen him make people look better. Lars Sullivan on NXT a week or two ago, I seen him pull him up to his level. I've seen him put people up to his level. Now, he's a really good worker. I wouldn't call him great. He's really good. But the psychology that he puts in a match, the excitement, the way he pulls the crowd into it is better than anyone else's.
Right.
And yeah. I just think it's like when Velveteen Dream's 55, right?
Uh-huh.
He's still going to have people, if he's still doing this, he would still have people excited in a match because he does all the stuff in between the moves so well.
Yeah, where it looks like he's about to pass out. And like, was it when he was in the, do you remember when he was in the North American Championship match, the ladder match?
Yeah.
And it looked like he was never going to get up the ladder. Like, he can make himself look so unathletic and look like such, like he's hurt so bad. You know what I mean? Like, he can make it look like everything he does is an accident. You know what I mean? When you know, obviously, that, you know, he's one of the best performers out there. That's my opinion.
He makes it look like he's reacting. And it just comes from, I know there's a lot of them, he was a wrestling fan. He was a fan of wrestling. He watches wrestling when he's not working, you know? And I don't need him to tell me that. I know he does because I see how he tells his story.
Right.
He tells his story like I feel I would tell my story if I was athletic and wrestling enough. You want to do homages. You want to do call-outs. You want to give a shout-out to all the people that have been wrestling fans forever so they can have that moment where they look for, man, that was a shout-out to Bret Hart. Oh, that was a shout-out to Ric Flair. Because you can say that because you know it.
Right. I dig it.
I just think he's just a master at storytelling. I think he's only going to get better. I think his timing's going to get better. I think, you know, his actual move storytelling's going to get better. Like, I thought, a note I made is that there was too many finisher kickouts in this one.
In the NXT title match, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it was like, I think he hit the elbow like two or three times. And he kicked out, and I'm just like, well, if that's your finisher, I can see him kicking out of one. I'm all about a finisher kick out. But right. If you hit that second one, it should be the match over. But that the Dream Valley driver, he kind of no-sold that a DDT on a belt, and he kicks out? Come on. Yeah. This is like some things have to be sacred for Torah's storytelling's sake.
Right. It's not always a good thing when you're setting that precedent that it can be kicked out of, right?
Yeah, it's like, I DDT you on a belt, you shouldn't kick out of that.
Right, I get that. Overall, what'd you give the match?
Oh, I gave the match a 4.5.
Nice. I dig it. We closed out the show with the War Games match, and that was the War Raiders, Pete Dunne, and Ricochet taking on all four members of Undisputed Era, and Ricochet and Pete Dunne actually got the win, got the pin. This match went 47 minutes, bro. What'd you think about this match overall?
Too damn long.
It was long, wasn't it? It was great, but it was long.
I thought it was really good, but it was long, and it was like, halfway through, I was like, is this almost over?
Yeah.
And it was just like, I really do love War Games. Don't get me wrong. It just felt like it dragged. It even felt like at some point the wrestlers ran out of stuff to do.
Right.
it was like, oh, I've done that. But the double moonsault off the top rope.
Oh, my God.
Off the top of the cage.
By Ricochet.
He's a freaking freak of nature.
Yeah, how do you do that? How do you survive that? That's incredible. Yeah.
Dude, it was just crazy. I love the whole Bobby Fish locking Pete Dunne in. I thought that was creative.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the Undisputed Era theme chairs.
I know when they pulled those out and they had Undisputed Era on them, I was like, oh, that is so funny, dude. I did not. I don't know. I know I'm sounding dumb right now because I wouldn't expect you to bring that up. I forgot all about that. But yeah, it was Bobby Fish, wasn't it? That started grabbing the chairs and he knew exactly where they were. And yeah, they were Undisputed Era folding chairs.
Yeah, and I don't think Bobby Fish I think they needed him for this spot, but I don't think he's all the way back yet. Because first of all, he came in last, you know, so he would work less. And right. I felt like they kind of protected him in the match.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of felt like that as well. And I don't think I noticed this when I was watching, but when I was listening to a review of the show, Meltzer actually said that he was helped to the back, Bobby Fish was. Did you see that?
I did not see that, but Triple H addressed it on the after, saying he didn't re-injure his knee. Basically, they were selling.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha.
They were just selling that they got the hell beat out of him.
Okay. I gotcha. So, okay. Cool. Well, that's actually good to hear. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, because, of course, yeah, you don't want no injuries. And it's funny, because you got these taped, you know, NXT's taped like a month ago.
Right.
So, Pete Dunne gets his knee attacked on NXT. And that was like a month ago. Well, because it technically, in storyline, happened Wednesday, he's wearing a knee wrap.
Yeah.
It's like I said, WWE's shooting schedule, it feels like NXT is popular enough, and you pretty much own this Full Sail studio, so you think they could do live shows every week.
Yeah.
But they don't, and it really isn't that big a deal. It's just one of those things. It's just like, I know it's a TV show and it's storyline, but it kind of throws you off sometimes.
Right,
it's like,
right.
Well, why is he wearing this knee brace? He's like, oh, this was supposed to happen Wednesday. Okay, I get it.
Let's move over to Survivor Series, shall we?
Definitely. Let's go ahead over to Survivor Series.
So, first off, we had, two matches on the kickoff show? Did anybody notice that Michael Cole said that anything that happened on the kickoff show doesn't count? Did you notice that?
It didn't count because they had a story they were trying to tell.
Yeah, so apparently Meltzer said that when the decision was made to put the SmackDown tag team over on the kickoff show, I guess the original plan was for Raw to go completely undefeated. Somehow or another, that booking decision was changed without consulting with Vince, and so he had to get in Michael Cole's ear and tell him that if it happened on the kickoff show, it does not count. So that was just kind of weird to me, because, like, you know, there's fans sitting here that dedicated 2 hours of their life watching the kickoff show, and just so you'll tell them, just for you to go and tell them, that didn't count. It doesn't really matter. That's kind of a weird story to tell, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It was a weird story to tell. I didn't like the overall story, but if it leads to better story on SmackDown or other shows, I'm okay with it. I was really annoyed last night when I went to bed. I think I was just tired. I was like, dude, I even sent out a tweet, way to make your second show just look like shit. And then I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go to sleep. And I'm going to sleep on this because I'm really annoyed right now, because I'm a Team SmackDown guy. I'm a SmackDown guy. All my favorite wrestlers are on SmackDown, you know, as far as AJ Styles, Becky Lynch. You know, the guys I like are on SmackDown.
Right.
So
right.
I'm a SmackDown guy. So the fact that they went 6-0 against SmackDown was, yeah, annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll talk about that here in just a minute. We're going to start off with the Tag Team Survivor Series elimination match. This was actually the one that SmackDown did win, if I remember right. Well, it got down to the Revival versus the Usos. It looked like Revival was about to go over. The Usos end up pulling it out. That last 3 to 5 minutes where it was just them two, I thought that part was a really good match. I'd like to see them go one-on-one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and for me, that was a dream matchup because they are my two favorite active tag teams right now.
I got
Usos
you.
Usos and the Revival. So the fact that I got to see them work together towards the end, I thought that was great. I have been a big proponent of the Revival moving to SmackDown for a very long time.
Yeah, they might actually get some, you know, get some play over there, get some wins.
It's just the tag teams on SmackDown are a little smaller. So, it, you know, Vince doesn't have to have the whole, well, I can't have them beating up the Giants because, you know, the Usos are smaller.
Right.
The New Day is smaller. It's just a smaller group on there.
I got you. I got you. The Women's Survivor Series elimination match was next. Obviously, Team Raw won this one. This match actually went 20 minutes. I was actually kind of surprised they gave it so much time.
Well, how did our predictions go on the tag? I think I said the Usos and the New Day would survive.
Let's see here. So, I just, on the NXT show, we agreed on 3 out of 4.
Uh-huh.
And the one that we disagreed on was you said that Kairi Sane would go over. I said Shayna Baszler. So I just, the three that we agreed on, I just marked them out. And I just put 1-0 so far on the NXT part. And then Survivor Series Women's, we both said that Raw was going to win. So I'll cancel that out. The Raw Tag Team, you actually got that one right. So it is 1-1 right now.
Cool.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, it took me a second to do that there. The Women's Survivor Series match, I do not remember how that ended, to be honest with you.
It ended with Asuka was wrestling Sasha Banks. And Sasha she kind of had the advantage, and she was about to jump off the top ropes on Asuka. Nia pushed Sasha off the top ropes. And then Asuka taps her out with the Asuka lock. And then Nia leg drops Asuka 3 times. Then he gives her a Samoan drop and pins her.
Ah, okay. So I want to talk about Nia Jax for a second because...
Nuclear heat.
Yes. That is actually a heel turn that is working like no other right now. Am I right?
Let me tell you.
Break it down for me, Floyd. Break it down.
A friend of mine said, and tell me if I'm wrong, that whole Nia punching Becky Lynch thing might have been a work.
You think so?
Only reason I say it is because it has worked out so incredibly well for both of them.
I mean, that is true. That's a good point. I mean,
Becky Lynch had the bloody face in that iconic moment, and let me tell you, every time someone bleeds on the WWE, they pretty much stop everything, take the towel, and wipe them up until they can stop the bleeding.
Right.
They didn't with Becky Lynch. And then when they bleed, they don't ever show it in color again. Another thing that they went away from on Becky Lynch, like when they did the replays last night, they showed the full-on color with her bleeding out of her nose.
That is true. That's a good point.
Okay.
Nia,
of course, is now the facebreaker, Nia Jax. She's got nuclear heel heat. She has never been more heel ever. And Becky has never been more popular. So it might have been a happy accident. So, you know, I'm not one of those people that think, you know, everybody thinks everything. But this is just... this is just has worked out too well for me not to think this.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it just worked out. I don't know. Thinking about what you said, I mean, I don't know, man.
It's worked out perfectly.
It has worked out perfectly. You are right.
It has revitalized Nia's career, which was kind of stale.
Mm-hmm.
Becky was getting hot, but, oh, it made her nuclear. Now, Becky is as much face as Nia is heel. right now.
Yeah.
Last night, she couldn't do anything, and they were booing. She was eating it up.
Right, right.
I don't think Nia can ever go face again.
It's going to be hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
I personally think that it's probably just a happy accident for WWE that it happened like that, but it very easily could be one big work. I think if you look the way they booked this show, I kind of feel like we're giving them a lot of credit to say that they would be able to pull this off perfectly, don't you think?
Yeah, they're like, Nia just knocked the shit out of Becky as hard as you can. I mean, and then you don't have to do Ronda Rousey versus Becky Lynch because, you know, neither one has to take the fall.
Right.
You know?
You can save it for WrestleMania if you wanted to.
Save it for whatever. But the way that the Ronda Rousey match ended tonight, that could have easily been Becky.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Nia Jax, nuclear heat, standing in the ring. She turns on Sasha, standing in the ring as the sole survivor. People booing the shit out of her.
Right.
It's her eating it up. I think she might be happier as a heel.
Right.
Yeah. And now she doesn't have to. She didn't have to do the fake crying thing after matches anymore.
That's true. She doesn't have to be. She doesn't have to try to be the star. Or what was it? Was it the be your own star or something like that?
Yeah.
She can
be a star.
She can just be. You know, whatever she wants to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and every great face needs a heel to go up against.
Yeah.
And Nia could be a perfect heel because of her size. She's a perfect heel for most faces.
Right. This might turn out to be a big-time conspiracy, man. You never know. We might have just all got worked and not even realize it. You might have just cracked the code, my friend.
Dude, if it was a work, it was the best work ever.
Yeah, this we're giving WWE a lot of credit if it turns out that this was all work. Next, we had Seth Rollins beating Shinsuke Nakamura. Let me see here. Yeah, I actually got this one right, believe it or not.
Yeah, I had Dean Ambrose.
That's right.
Causing Seth Rollins to lose. And let me tell you, I got to give a shout out to the WWE. With the Survivor Series, the Raw vs. SmackDown brand, they decided to just stick with Raw vs. SmackDown. There was, no shenanigans in the show. And I thought the Shinsuke Nakamura and Seth Rollins match was a really good match.
It was.
I thought it was the match of the night. Or, honestly, kind of tied for the match of the night. It's really close with another one, but... I just thought they put on a really good match. I think Shinsuke did his stuff, Seth did his stuff, and then they had a very kind of neutral ending, you know, where it's like, okay, Seth Rollins was just one step ahead this time.
Right, right. Yeah, I completely agree. So a couple quick things I wanted to mention about this. So number one, Seth Rollins did two dives to the outside, right? You know, he does the two right in a row where he dives, jumps back in the ring, hits the ropes again, dives to the ropes again. He gets back into the ring after the second one. He's pumping up the crowd, and they chant one more time, one more time. He actually does it for a third time, and I was surprised because, you know, usually WWE has their matches laid out so precisely that I was pleasantly surprised that he was kind of able to you know, call an audible right there in the middle of the match and do a third suicide dive.
So many, like, some wrestlers have earned the ability to adapt and change. I'm guessing Seth Rollins is one of those.
That was actually the exact question I was going to ask you, is do you think that he has enough clout with Vince and Hunter that he's kind of able to do that and we'll get no backlash for it?
Absolutely.
I got you. That's cool. I dig it. The other thing was when people went back and started looking into the crowd, I think this is where we see Enzo Amore popping up on the screen at first, correct? I think people started seeing him out in the crowd. He was, like, wearing a hoodie. He was kind of getting to his chair. Supposedly he was wearing a wig or something.
I did not know that.
I think this is, I don't think this is where he caused the commotion. That was the next match, but I think this is where they seen him kind of starting to get to his seat. I guess he showed up late. And anybody, we'll find out more today, and we'll talk about this again tomorrow, you know, and I'll have it nailed down to exactly when it was, but I'm pretty sure this is when he started, when they started seeing him on the hard cam. But okay. The next match is actually where he started the commotion. And that was during the Authors of Pain beating the Bar, which we both picked Authors of Pain for this match, so it canceled each other out. Did you actually see it on the hard cam whenever Enzo...
No.
I didn't either. I just seen it on Twitter afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't see it until it was on Twitter.
Yeah, so I don't know if maybe there was a... Was there a... I wonder if there was a delay and they were able to get off the hard cam, you know what I mean, before the crowd at home, the audience at home seen it. Do you know?
No, I honestly don't. I don't know. I really don't. Yeah. I mean, let me tell you, everything I found out about Enzo, I found out about probably 45 minutes after it happened.
Yeah, same here. Apparently, when I first started reading about this, I figured that he would probably get, like, this hero's welcome from the crowd or whatnot. But from the videos that I've seen, like, he was getting the crap boot out of him. Is that what you've seen?
I saw some of that. I saw some people loving him, you know.
Oh, you did see him getting some love?
Yeah, people that were happy that, you know, he was close to him. But apparently he was shouting stuff to draw heat.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think there is any chance whatsoever that WWE had anything to do with Enzo showing up?
No. not even a bit. Let me clarify something. He did. A friend of mine or someone I've met, he runs a site called NoDQ.com. His name is Aaron Rift. Uh-huh. He actually was at the show, and he said he ran to the exit where they would have extorted them out, and they didn't. They actually escorted them backstage.
Oh, really?
They didn't kick them out.
Hmm. So you think that's kind of weird?
It's just a better story if they kicked them out for him.
I gotcha. So you think they took him to the back and he's seen the big man? You think he's seen Vince?
I think he saw everybody. I mean, I don't think he's like... I mean, not a lot of people liked him, but he doesn't work there anymore, so I don't think they hated him. I'm pretty sure he still had friends in the back.
Oh, man, I don't know. I figured, that's weird. We're gonna have to look into this more, because I can't imagine him doing that, WWE not knowing about it, and then them escorting him to the back for him to be able to say what's up to everyone. I'm kind of thinking, like, maybe they took him to the back so they could safely remove him.
Maybe. I don't know. The thing about it is he was vindicated, you know?
Right, yeah, and that's why I thought that he would get, like, a hero's welcome from the crowd, you know? Like, people, oh, man, this guy should get his job back. Like, you know, he was...
Dude, the world we live in is guilty till proven innocent. And let's say you're guilty and then finally proven innocent. A lot of people don't even hear about you being innocent. So in their mind, you're still guilty.
That is true. That is true. Very true. Let's talk about the next match, which was... Well, actually, what did you think about the Authors of Pain and the Bar match? It went 8 minutes and Dude, 5 seconds. AOP goes over.
Very hard-hitting. I did like Drake running around, running into the Big Show, and then you know, then the whole pissing himself thing. Vince McMahon, from what I found, I've known Vince McMahon thinks that's the funniest thing in the world. People losing control of their bowels or whatever, right, and peeing themselves. So he thought that was really funny. It was clear that he had a water bottle or something, or Drake Maverick is just really gifted. The bulge, you know what I mean? Whatever it was that was supposed to make him look like he peed on himself, it somehow went to the front. Or Drake Maverick is very gifted, like I said. I mean, one or the other. AOP hits their finisher, but like I said, it was a hard-hitting match. The only thing I can say is I know Cesaro and Sheamus can put on a better match than this.
Right.
I would have liked to see it.
Yeah. I dig that. Yeah, I think maybe Authors of Pain might still be a little bit green in comparison to Cesaro and Sheamus. I think maybe if they had a couple more years underneath their belt of them wrestling full-time, they could have assisted in putting in on a better match, because, like you said, I know the bar can put on a phenomenal match. So, but I think, I also say that, and I also want to state, I think the Authors of Pain are a rare breed and a phenomenal talent that are going to go far in this business as a tag team, wouldn't you say?
Me too. I completely agree. They have a look. I keep waiting on, you know, like the GM or whatever start using them as bullies just to beat up whoever they want to beat up.
Yeah, they should be playing a heater to why am I drawing a blank on the Raw
Baron
GM?
Corbin.
Yeah, Baron Corbin, which I predict, or I'm going to assume that tonight he's going to get that full-time GM role. I mean, because technically they went completely undefeated at Survivor Series, so I feel like Baron Corbin's going to get knighted by Sir Stephanie McMahon to be the full-time GM, or she's going to come out there and be like, you did your job, now you're fired. One of the two.
Which is hilarious because, you know, I feel like she's going to screw over Braun. Like, Braun's like, I did everything I was supposed to do. I want my world title shot. And I want Baron Corbin. And she's like, well, now that Baron Corbin's the full-time GM, he won't be wrestling, so you can't beat him up.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. I guess we'll find out tonight, right?
We will find out tonight.
Yep.
I will not be watching Raw Live tonight because my favorite team is the Kansas City Chiefs, and they will be in the game of the year versus the Los Angeles Rams.
It's going to be a phenomenal game.
So 9-1 Chiefs against 9-1 Rams. If you listen to the show, root for the Chiefs, the Chiefs Chiefs, and root for my team, and I'll watch Raw after.
Word. Next, the Cruiserweight title match, which seen the champion Buddy Murphy successfully defending the title against Mustafa Ali.
You called that one?
Yep, I called this one correctly. It went 12 minutes and 20 seconds. What'd you think about it?
Dude, it could have went 36 minutes. Mustafa Ali and Buddy Murphy have this amazing chemistry.
Yep.
And I just thought this match was really well. When I found out, like, it only went 12 minutes, I thought it had went 20 because they squeezed so much action into that 12 minutes and they told so much story. Mustafa Ali is the story of the Cruiserweight division. I just really think he is the star. I don't know if you can, you know, I don't know if the division will blow up once he becomes champion or anything like that, but I am just such a fan of his. And
right.
I just thought he did a really good job in this match.
Yeah, I love his intro mask and chest protector that lights up. I just think that is so cool. It's so unique, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like he's usually Sub-Zero. Last night he looked like he was more towards Scorpion.
Yeah.
And then it was just like I said, he just does it. And he makes every move that's done look like it killed him.
Yep.
You know, and it was like Buddy Murphy, those snap knees that he throws are so crisp and look so good. And it's just like I say, he's only second to committee. Kenny Omega is throwing the knees. And oh, the whole what was that move? The backflip rock bottom off of the announce table.
Oh, the Spanish fly.
Spanish fly off the announce table.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was.
Oh
sick.
My god.
That was sick. That had to hurt his lower back, dude. That had to. Oh,
dude,
I can just imagine taking just a front bump like that onto just the ground. Like my god.
They're just so good at working together, though. It's just, it's like Buddy Murphy. He used to call, he was called NXT's best kept secret. I'm like, dude, he was the WWE's best kept secret.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that dude is so good.
Yeah. And they explained his story last night, which I thought was really cool. He was in the, you know, basically the beginnings of NXT or FCW, whatever you want to call it, for 5 years. He worked his ass off to get under 205, and now he's on top of the cruiserweight world. That's the way they, you know, they gave you the quick and dirty backstory of him last night, and I just thought that was so cool. He's got such a cool story, phenomenal worker, and he, you know, in a way, for someone that mainly just watches the main roster, this guy kind of came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, he just kind of, you know, if you were able to follow his career through NXT and back when it was FCW, if he was there, he might not have been there when it was FCW, but he was with NXT even back before NXT was, like, on TV all the time and stuff. And, yeah, like you said, they called him NXT's best-kept secret, WWE's best-kept secret. It's just phenomenal, man. Just absolutely phenomenal.
He was engaged to Alexa Bliss, so that's awesome, too.
Was he really?
Yeah.
What happened there?
It was on the one season Alexa was on Total Divas. It was a big part of, you know, them being engaged and not getting married, and I think they officially broke up. But, you know, Alexa's fairly private about that stuff, so.
I got you. I did not know that. Good on you, buddy Murphy. Next, we had the Men's Survivor Series match. Sorry, I didn't drink a coffee here. I was able to call this one right, too. Man, I think, yeah, man, if I did my math correctly, because we both called Brock winning the last one, right?
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to call it now. I actually won 4-1. I won the picks this time. I still did not catch up because you beat me 5-1, I think it was, last pay-per-view. So, but yeah, I actually did win this one, surprisingly. But the Men's Survivor Series match, they just completely buried SmackDown in this match, right?
Well, yeah, they buried it from the beginning. Because, let's say, the smallest person on Raw was Finn Balor.
Right.
Who was pretty much larger or as big as everybody on SmackDown.
Yeah.
Except Samoa Joe.
And Samoa Joe was knocked out within 30 seconds of the bell ring. And did you hear the crowd?
Yeah, because he's from Huntington, California.
Yeah, Huntington Beach, California.
Yeah, he's from the Los Angeles area. He loses quick. Now, my question is, and this is why I like heels more than faces. Why did they let him get pinned?
Yeah, they just stood there. Like, I think Shane and maybe Rey Mysterio, like, they did the whole gimmick where they, like, half their body was in the ring and half was out. Like, they were stepping in, but they didn't go break up the pin. You know what I mean?
Why did they break up the pin?
Yeah.
At the point where it's 5-on-5, there should be a lot of pin breakups.
Yeah, you should have one person designated to, like, as soon as a pin starts, you should be getting in the ring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe designate Rey Mysterio for that job since he's obviously going to be the quickest person on your team.
Yeah, so...
He was, like, seriously, it was like 30 seconds and Samoa Joe was already booted.
So McIntyre got one pin and then Braun got all the rest of them, right?
I think that is how it went, yeah. And as soon as Samoa Joe was pinned, the whole crowd... in unison chanted, bullshit, bullshit. Sound like the Goldberg chant, except it was BS, you know?
Yeah, I was not a fan of this match. I loved the Shane doing the elbow off the top. I loved him doing the coast to coast. I loved that part.
Right.
But the rest of it was just a squash match. And...
I mean, yeah, basically, I agree. It kind of, like, why is Shane McMahon been the last surviving SmackDown member 2 years in a row? Why is that?
I don't know.
That's so dumb. What? I mean, this is a 48-year-old, you know, general manager, right? Or commissioner, whatever.
He's not a performer.
Yeah, he's not a full-time performer. I mean, I just don't get it. I don't get it at all. But we did see after the match, Braun Strowman is kind of, you know, I guess celebrating, you would call it, and Baron Corbin comes in, hits him from behind, and Bobby Lashley, Drew McIntyre, and Baron Corbin leave together as Braun Strowman is in the ring, kind of throwing, not really throwing a hissy fit, but like staring them down as they leave.
Yeah.
So Baron Corbin takes the first shot now that they're able to, I guess, go after each other, because that was the deal they made with Stephanie, right? That Braun made with Stephanie. She won't touch Baron until after Survivor Series, right?
Yep.
So now, like we talked about earlier in the show, we'll see what happens tonight on Raw with that whole deal. Next, we had, and this we're going to talk about this one quite a bit for a minute, Ronda Rousey beating Charlotte by DQ. What did you think about this match first?
Match was very hard-hitting, very physical. Ronda constantly going for the armbar. I love that. Charlotte really out-wrestling her. I like that. A lot of hard-hitting. The way their hair, I was like, it was like their Charlotte's hair looked so crazy. And it ended up building up for something, but I thought the match was really well done.
See, okay, when I first watched this match, it was obvious they were there. It was unlike any other match on the show, right? It looked more like a shoot style match. It looked more, you know, like you know, Ronda was going after the armbar basically the entire time, right? Uh-huh. At first, I kind of was like, I don't know, because if you watch it, and correct me if you disagree, but I really think to a certain degree this kind of showed that Ronda is, when it comes to pro wrestling, she is at least one step behind Charlotte Flair at all times. Did it not?
And I think that's what it was supposed to show. Charlotte is the professional wrestler.
Right.
Ronda is the MMA person. So whenever they got into strikes and those type of, like, the judo positions,
mm-hmm.
Ronda had the advantage. But when they were in a professional wrestling advantage position, the queen had the advantage. I thought that was what they were trying to say.
See, I kind of took it a little bit different. The way that I looked at it was, is they were making it look like a shoot style fight and making it look like it was like they were evenly matched. Like, you know, the professional wrestler in Charlotte and the shoot fighter in Ronda Rousey, they were both trying to fight their style of fight. They were both trying to have their style match, and it was clashing perfectly, and neither one of them was getting the upper hand. And it kind of did give me that vibe. But you could tell that Charlotte was not moving. To me, it just looked like Charlotte wasn't moving at full speed because, you know, they only had 3 days to practice this match. You know, Ronda has had ample time to practice every match that she's had thus far, you know, for at least a week to 2 weeks, if not more. And this match right here, she only had 3 days to prepare for it. I'm not taking anything away from Ronda. I think someone that has only been wrestling since April, I don't think there's probably a person on earth that has been wrestling as long as Ronda has that could have put on as good of a match as Ronda did. Does that make sense?
Only problem I had is I was in the club and it made perfect sense. Let me say that first.
Okay.
Well, my friend William said, stop calling out the spot so loud. And I read that and then I started watching the match and that's all I could hear.
Yeah. Yeah. In
that way, that was green.
Yeah,
like it was like she was going for the she had Charlotte down for the armbar, and she literally leaned up to her and said, "You leaned up in there and said fight back or something like that."
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you see Charlotte move her arms up
and locked her hands together around Ronda's shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah, to me that was like the most obvious situation.
Right. Yeah. I'm not, you know, for everyone out there that's listening, I don't want you to think that I'm taking anything away from Ronda. I think for as long as she's been wrestling, she put on, I mean, like you could call this a 5-star match considering she hasn't even been wrestling 9 months. You know what I mean? Like it was phenomenal. I'm just saying that, you know, that The amount of time that they've been putting into this business, Charlotte's been here for several years, Ronda's been here for, 8 months or whatever, it kind of showed in this match. But with that being said, at first I didn't really think that I liked this match. I was like, they're trying to make it look more like a shoot-style fight than an actual pro wrestling match. But then I got to, as the match went on, I was kind of like, that it makes it unique. Like, it makes this match unique in comparison to everything else on the card. And I really started to get into it. I did notice, like you said, that she, is kind of green, or really green, actually. And, she was calling the spots a little loud. But she did take a brutal whooping at the end of it, right? Once Charlotte was disqualified with the kendo stick, hit to the midsection when Ronda was coming around. And then, she just beat her down.
They shot this well, because I never even saw the kendo stick.
Same, until she yes. hit Ronda with her. I agree, dude. That was perfect. The camera angle was perfect. You didn't even see it coming. And the way the crowd reacted, I don't think they seen it coming either. Because I think Ronda running as fast as she could, going taking two turns around the ring, I think it was a perfect distraction from Charlotte pulling out that kendo stick from underneath the ring. You surprised when Charlotte started beating up Ronda and everyone takes Charlotte's side? And the
absolutely, because she, Ronda Rousey is very much a California girl.
Right,
she is
right.
Los Angeles, Hollywood. She represents California pretty much as hard as anyone. But you got to think about it. The crowd, even though it's pro LA, it's pro wrestling more than anything.
Right. Do you think the Millennial Man promo had anything to do with Ronda getting booed tonight or last night?
I think her getting destroyed on promos by Becky Lynch.
So you think her beefing with Becky Lynch is what got her booed last night?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because, my next question is, okay, so let me explain this part real quick. So she takes the whooping from, she takes like the 15 kendo shots from Charlotte. Then Charlotte does the Pillman spot where she puts her head in the chair and then stomps on the chair. And then there begins a chant, 17,000, 16,000 people chant, "Thank you, Charlotte." They cheer, and then when Ronda starts, milling around and starts getting up and says she doesn't want help, they boo her. You hear one fan right close to the camera say, "Yeah, get the F out of here," or get the hell out of the ring. That's what they said, get the hell out of the ring. And then they chant, "Na na na na, na 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 na." You know, they do the whole thing, hey, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They really gave it to Ronda. There was nobody chanting, no one clapping for Ronda. Everyone took Charlotte's side, and Ronda looked distraught. She looked like she was about to cry. She told one fan, "You're not the man," or "You're not a real man." I don't know if you've seen that, but there was a fan, I guess, talking trash to her, and she said, "You're not a real man." And she looked back at the crowd with tears in her eyes. You think that was real? Do you think she was really upset at the crowd reaction? She just took this brutal ass whooping, and then the crowd turns on her and cheers Charlotte.
I think she was just selling.
You think she was just selling?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I think I disagree with you on this one. In my opinion, I think like she was kind of, because she's had this love affair with pro wrestling thus far, and
She left smiling and shit after that ass whooping she just took. I thought the kind of tears in her eyes looking defeated was, just got the shit beat out of me.
Right. I mean, I understand that. And for all I know, this could be a complete work. I'm not saying that. I just feel like maybe it's just me just wishful thinking. You know what I mean? That someone's taken, this art that they're doing to heart, you know what I mean? But I just felt like that Ronda really did not expect the crowd to take Charlotte's side on that. You know
she
what I mean?
She probably didn't, but it's a wrestling crowd, right?
Right.
And I've said this statement before, this exact statement. How do you build a sympathetic face when the country as a whole lacks sympathy?
Right. That's a good point.
Again, last night, that was the perfect idea. Ronda Rousey wrestled a clean match. She did what she was supposed to. Charlotte cheated, took out a kendo stick, and then beat the crap out of her, wrapped a chair around her head, and then stomped down it.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
So Shayna Baszler was actually asked on Twitter what she felt, or how did she, someone asked her, how does Ronda feel about the crowd turning on her? And Shayna actually replied to someone on Twitter and said, we came into this knowing that pro wrestling fans are really fickle. They're not as fickle as UFC fans, but still fickle nonetheless. So there is, you know, there is at the very least, a section of fans that kind of share my viewpoint that maybe it was there was some real emotion in there from Ronda. I guess we'll find out in the coming weeks. I think the best thing that, and you would probably agree with this, if that was real emotion, the best thing Ronda can do is to come out swinging and cutting promos and everything else and not retreating like she did after her first loss in the UFC. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I can say is I didn't like her walking away.
Yeah, I think she should have been helped to the back. Don't you agree?
I think she should have been stretched out. The chair shot with the head wrap around is supposed to break your neck.
Yeah, yeah. And instead, she just did the whole, don't touch me. and walked out underneath her own power. I thought she undersold that.
I think if she went out on a stretcher, I don't think the fans would have been chanting, you deserve it.
I agree.
I just don't think the selling was strong enough. I know people get tired of the stretcher, but I thought, in this case, with that move being done to her, the stretcher was the only way to go.
Yep, I agree. I think that much of a beatdown, it did warrant a stretcher. I'll tell you this. We've seen people get less of a beatdown get stretchered out. You know what I mean?
And that's what I'm saying. It wouldn't have made Ronda look tough. I mean, it would have made her look vulnerable.
Right, right.
And the fact that she pushes the referees off, shakes, just kind of walks away from that ass whooping, I think a lot of people reacted to that.
Yep, I agree. As far as our predictions go, you said that you think that was going to end in either a schmoz where neither of them won, or that Ronda was going to win, and then I picked Ronda as well, so we canceled that one out. Neither one of us got that one.
It was like I looked at my fiance and I was like, schmoz, they didn't want it to be a clean ending. I felt like it wasn't going to be a clean ending, but I thought it was going to be a double count out or double DQ way. I didn't think they were going to give somebody the win.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. And I'll be honest, man. Like I said, when I first seen how they laid out the match with it looking more of a shoot style fight than a big flashy entertaining pro wrestling match, at first I was kind of like, I don't know if I like this. Like, I feel like they're kind of catering to Ronda, but then I started thinking outside the box. Like, well, no, that's kind of the point. Like, Ronda's, you know, making Charlotte fight her style of fight. You know what I mean? That's the beauty of it. And I really started to enjoy it after that. Does that all make sense, the way I'm explaining
that? Absolutely. Absolutely.
It took me a minute to realize the art of that match. Like, the first couple of minutes, I'm like, this is different. This is more of Ronda's style match. And then I realized, like, yeah, Charlotte was kind of sucked in to fighting Ronda's style of fight. You know what I mean? Because almost like Ronda was the cooler head and Charlotte was trying to get in there and beat up Ronda, and Ronda just kept making her pay because she kept catching her with an armbar from a million different angles. So I thought the art of the match turned out to be really cool. I thought it turned out to be really cool. Could have used a stretcher at the end. The final match of the night, which was...
Dude, we're going to Survivor Series next year.
Are we?
Survivor Series, Chicago, 2019.
Oh, they just announced that?
like just now. It literally says just now on my Facebook page. My friend Carrie, he's always in the front row. He's the blonde guy that wears the collar and elbow tie-up shirt.
I've seen him. Yeah, he was just to the left. Yeah, just slightly to the left.
Yeah, he just announced it.
That's
WWE
cool.
WWE announced the Survivor Series comes to Chicago, so I will be at Survivor Series next year.
Yeah, that's cool, dude. We'll have to go to it together. The final match of the night, Brock Lesnar taking on Daniel Bryan, and Brock Lesnar defeating Daniel Bryan in 18 minutes and 45 seconds. What did you think?
It was the same match as the AJ Styles match.
So, yeah, I at first when Brock was whooping his butt, when he was whooping that ass, he was getting chants of same old shit. And I think there was even kind of a boring chant there for a minute, and Brock was just eating that up. He just loved that. And then Daniel Bryan got the low blow, and then the running knee, and that crowd actually got hot there for a while. So you did not like this match. Is that what you're saying?
It was the same match. I mean, I liked it just as much as I liked the one last year.
Touche, my friend. Touche.
You know, I'm just saying, Brock dominates the first mark.
Right.
He makes a mistake, or the other person takes advantage. This time it was Daniel Bryan hitting him in the nuts. Last year it was, I think he ran into the post. Then it's all Daniel Bryan, him getting his offense in. He looks like he's about to tap out. He reverses it into F5. Pretty much spot for spot. They did it the AJ Styles way last year. And they did it the Daniel Bryan way this year.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
Someone's like, this is his best match. I'm like, it's the same match.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
If I was going to tell you what happened last year, Brock Lesnar came out and beat up AJ Styles for 8 minutes. AJ then got some offense, looks like he was about to win, and then Brock Lesnar hits F5. Let me tell you about the match with Daniel Bryan. Brock Lesnar whooped Daniel Bryan's ass for 8 minutes. Daniel Bryan got a reversal. Then he got some offense, looked like he was about to win, and then Brock Lesnar F5'd him.
Yeah.
Same match.
That's a good point. Valid point, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't hate it. It was just, I just saw it. I was in attendance last time when I saw it, but I saw this, I was like, when they were telling the story, I was like, they're telling the same story.
Right.
And it's just like, It was the romantic comedy of wrestling matches.
It was the rom-com?
Because it was the same story as last year. It was like, I mean, they did it to Daniel Bryan away this time, but still same.
Yeah, I see your point. Now that you're putting them side by side, I didn't think of it like that, but now that you're saying that, I do. I can see that. And I have a quick correction to make. You actually got the time closer to the overall time of Brock versus Daniel Bryan. So the final tally was 4-2. I won this pay-per-view, but it wasn't, I said 4-1, but I forgot that we did the tiebreaker just in case we tied up, which was also like its own deal. So 4-2, my win this time. So we are actually, since we started going head-to-head on pay-per-views, we're now officially 1-1.
Congratulations on the win.
I'm flossing right now. You can't tell, but I'm flossing.
I want to tell everyone that I really did enjoy Daniel Bryan's like new attitude, the cocky kind of fuck with Brock Lesnar. I thought that was different. But like I said, anybody that's saying this match was amazing, you either didn't watch last year or you literally have the memory that the WWE thinks you have.
Oh, Floyd, I love you, man. I love you, man.
Because it was the same match. I'm like, I'm watching it. This wasn't like me going back. I'm watching it. And I was like, this is the exact. It would be different if it wasn't the same show.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean.
This is the same match at the same show. And they told the same story. And it was just like, oh, my God, couldn't this match have been somewhat 50-50? Or maybe tell it the other way around. Daniel Bryan catches Brock Lesnar from the beginning, and then Brock Lesnar has to come back. But it was just like, oh, my God. And the 8 minutes of boring put me to sleep. It literally put me to sleep. Crystal was sitting next to me, and she had to wake me up because it's 8 minutes of nothing.
Oh, that's funny. You literally... You fell asleep on the main event. Oh, man, that's awesome. Well, I think you and I will be back tomorrow morning, and then probably going to take the rest of the week off for Thanksgiving, don't you think?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I work every day, so I forgot it. I was like, oh.
Are you working Thanksgiving this year?
Dude. Actually, I am off that night because my friend said he would work to me. Otherwise, I would be working. I'm going to do a little Black Friday shopping.
Right on, right on. You got to get that food in, man. I know you and I like our food, so I didn't figure you'd be working on Thanksgiving. That's the best holiday of the year.
Dude, you know, I get more food at Thanksgiving because I tell people I'm working, and then everybody's like, I'll bring you a plate. Dude, I eat so much.
Oh, that's a good point. I'm going to start telling people I'm working on Thanksgiving. Yeah, they just like, bring me the food.
Yeah, dude.
Well, Floyd, my man, tell everybody where you spend the weekends at.
Dude, I spend the weekends on our show Around the Ring. It's on thechairshot.com. Sundays, usually around noon. We put it out a little early this week. You can follow us facebook.com, Twitter, Around the Ring. Okay, it's the same name for both. Just like I said, it's me and my friend Ryan every Sunday. And again, chairshot.com, just like you can find this show with me and my boy Jordan.
That's right, man. Floyd, just want to say, as always, it was a treat to break down this pay-per-view with you. I learned something new every time we break down a show together. Don't forget, everyone, follow us on social media at IWR Daily, at Fox the Podcaster. Floyd and I just want to say thank y'all to everyone that tunes in each and every weekday morning on thechairshot.com, on iTunes, and anywhere else you find your podcasts. For Floyd and myself, we want to say stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?